It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland on this Valentine's Day edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor, you wouldn't let this day go by without talking a little bit about
it. I didn't think I could.
Well, <I'd> catch. It's so much in the wheelhouse of what you talk about and counsel people, their relationships, marital issues. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to kind of reiterate some things to keep in mind about not just Valentine's, but the larger issue of romance and how men and women see this subject or experience this.
And Valentine's Day is a great time to bring it up. As we were talking before the show, that probably the reason that Valentine's Day is such a makes such a statement on Valentine's Day about this issue of romance and love is that it gets kind of left out or brushed aside for the rest of the year. At least, the gals might feel that it does. Well, I've had some interesting conversations with clients and my wife and myself about this whole idea of romance and love and just the way that the difficulty of actually communicating it, which when it comes down to it, there's not that much. Men and women are not that different, but we do certainly process things differently. I'd say that this Valentine's Day, this day of the year, is a day that kind of like no other day in the year, accentuates the best of or exacerbates the worst of that whole Venus-Mars conundrum where, you know.
Now, tell us what is Mars and Venus? What is that?
Well, there was a book that came out, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Right. Different planets.
Yeah. And then another one came out, which I really liked, which was Men Aren't From Mars, Women Aren't From Venus, We're All From Earth.
Okay.
Yeah. And but yeah, stereotypically, you know, we think of Valentine's Day. It's stereotypically, it's the woman waiting, hoping that the man will remember the day and make some kind of a meaningful romantic gesture. And stereotypically, the men fail to come through on that.
Do you really think most men forget it's Valentine's Day?
Oh, that's a good question, Mark. I don't. I'll tell you what, I think a lot of men forget it. Maybe it's selective memory or something, but I think a lot of men remember it when their wives remind them on what, well, you know what today is or you know what tomorrow is. Mm. Otherwise, it kind of goes by. So.
Wasn't it kind of an invention just in the last 100 years?
The history of it's really vague. I was kind of looking into that because there's a whole story about how it had to do with St. Valentine, and then another story how it was borrowed from a pagan Roman holiday, which, you know, a lot of our holidays are. Nevertheless, what it is today is that a day that you had better remember.
Well, in our marriages, I think, you know, Valentine's has a meaning. But also, I remember grade school. Valentine's was kind of a big deal and how many hearts you were able to collect or not collect.
And oh, yeah.
There was almost a real valuing. It's like it was an early version of, you know, social media.
I was almost like, who's following you on Facebook.
And it was pretty kind of traumatic a little bit. It was, I remember some early memories. Mm-hmm.
And you looked for the one. I remember looking for the one from
the
maybe
girl
a particular
that I really
girl.
Interested
yeah.
In. Did
I mean,
she give
the
me
rest,
one?
Yeah, because the rest of them really didn't matter that much.
So anyway, our funny social constructs that we do. But, getting back to the significance, what is the significance of romance?
Of that, it's a bit vague, I think, between men and women until they actually sit down to talk it through. And, you know, what do we really mean by romance? And that could be a conversation between men and women that would start out very polarized. But I think if we talked about it enough, I think that husband and wife talked about it enough, they would come to some kind of agreement because our experiences are not that far apart, although our way of processing. So I've been having a conversation with a number of men over this issue, and it's remarkable just how the structure of the brain comes into play here, where men tend to not be able to express emotions in words. I mean, they can express it physically, you know, and they're actually quite emotional, it seems like, at times. But when it comes right down to expressing it, and a lot of times this can be viewed by women or gals as that the man is being evasive or isn't in touch with himself. And men kind of collude with that and use that as an excuse. Well, I'm just a guy. You know, we're not emotional. What's really going on, though, is men can learn to communicate in those ways. But really what has to happen is there's a process in the brain where the male brain is the hemispheres are more defined, let's say, because testosterone has to do with actually separating those hemispheres. And what the men are left with after puberty, during puberty and after puberty, is that the emotional experiences are on one side of the brain and the language is on the other side.
In the male brain.
In the male brain. Now, women have the hemispheres too, but for some reason...
They're connected more.
They're more integrated. Mm-hmm. And so when my wife, for example, and gals... bear with me here. Since having never been a woman, I'm just kind of speaking from the outside looking in. So, but when my wife asks me, "Do you love me?" and when we were engaged to be married, or I had proposed to her, and I think her words were, "Well, you haven't even said you love me."
You're proposing to her, yeah. But you've never said you actually love her,
right? And so she said, "Well, so do you love me?" And I'm kind of like, "Well," and so to her, this looks really bad because if you don't love me, why are you proposing? But what's going on in my brain, the word over there, she's brought the word up, and that is a word in my vocabulary, but it's not connected to any kind of experiences necessarily. Mm. And I even told her, you know, I've used the word love lots of times in my life, and I'm not even sure what I mean when I use that word in this context. It really does require, for a lot of men, or I would say for most men, it really does require that the man contemplate experiences and actually wire a neurological connection over to that word so that we get better at it, so that at this point in my marriage, so we've been married for 38 years, when my wife says, well, she doesn't have to say, "Do you love me?" now, because I have in my brain, I've done enough work connecting what she means by love and what I mean, so that I can use the word without feeling like I'm being like it's just a word, like I'm out on thin ice and I'm being in some ways even maybe dishonest, just using a love as a platitude rather than actually having an emotion that goes with it. But I have the sense that for her, it's not that dramatic, that the word and the experience are actually closer together in her brain than they are in mine, where I've actually had to make connections. So we would have this conversation, something like, remember the song "A Fiddler on the Roof"? The name of the song was "Do You Love Me?"
Do you love me, right?
And if you,
he goes, "What do you mean? Do I love you? I do this, that, and the other thing, but do you love me?"
Yeah. So in that case, it's the man asking the woman, "Do you love me?" Which was kind of a flip flop for that culture, and also for Hollywood, because people who write movies are typically not. They're not of the same kind as men welders.
It was the man singing to the woman.
Yeah, and so he's saying. But I think if we could bring it into true life, it would be. I might ask my wife, "Do you love me?" Probably it wouldn't be that way. But what I would be searching for is, help me to connect some kind of experiences to this word love that we're using. And so they go through this whole thing on the song where, "Do you love me?" Well, you know, I cook and I sew and I... So this would normally be turned around, where it would be the wife asking the husband, "Do you love me?" And the husband would say, "Well, gee, you know,
Bring
home the bacon. I do this and that." So he would have to actually connect those experiences and feelings that he has about her. I say to my wife before we were married, I said, "Well, I certainly honor you and respect you, and I will never be unfaithful to you. And my feelings for you are stronger than I've had for any other person, or than I can, you know, on and on and on." But I'm not using the word love. But what I'm doing is I'm building a bridge between those feelings and those meaningful things and her word love. So at the end of that song, "Do You Love Me?", they finally have gone through, "Well, I cook, I sew, I clean, you know, I do this," and then at the end of the song, they agree that, "Well, I guess we love each other." And then the last line is, "Nothing really changed, but after 25 years, it's good to know."
Right.
So now we can sort of use the word, and married couples can get to that place where they use the word. But I think a lot of times it's uncomfortable for both sides, for women to see, if they were to wonder, "Do you love me?" and the husband is kind of like waffling around about, well, do it. And for him, a lot of times, it's actually building neurological pathways from his experience to the love. But what's really helpful is kind of like the song, Do You Love Me?, where they sit down and they talk about, well, when you say you love me, sweetheart, the man says to his wife, what do you mean? And I would guess that when she starts to describe, and for a lot of women, maybe they haven't described that, so they're working maybe the other way, because to them, maybe it's more holistic. But if she were to stop and describe what she means by that, it would be very similar to the experiences that he's trying to connect with the word.
Mm.
Now, it doesn't feel very Hollywood-like, you know. It's not spontaneous. It's having to be scripted, so they're actually talking about. But they can get to the place where then they can use the word love and have meaning to it.
Well, you say men are much more comfortable with description than with definition.
And that's because of that. I mean, men might like to think of themselves as black and white. Things are either right or wrong. But when it comes right down to it, particularly in things like love or any of the virtues, if they would be asked about these virtues, they would find themselves, unless they had rehearsed it, just cold. They would find themselves going into that part of their brain, that left part of their brain, and kind of recounting experiences and then trying to draw pathways over to the actual words. And what they've found in a lot of research what they've done with men in this area, that men may not use the word love unless it's been rehearsed, and you know, over years we can learn to do that. They may not use that word, but or let me back out of that and use another example. Of grieving, which is very, very similar to this. So I had lost my mother died some 10 or 15 years ago. My dad died about 5 years ago. My wife was concerned that I wasn't processing it or grieving it. Well, to me, that was a very different experience. I wouldn't have used the term grieving, but I was certainly thought about them and remembered. So if she was saying, well, if she was going to have me describe my grieving process, I might not use the word grieving, but I would be more comfortable telling stories about times with dad, times with mom. Mm-hmm. So for the man, he goes over into the left side of the brain and he's looking at experiences. So men are more comfortable describing rather than just using the word feels like a platitude or some sort of a falsehood until they've drawn those connections. So that's why I say, see, when you define a thing, you draw limits on it. And so when the woman says to the man, do you love me? And that word is supposed to have a meaning to it. But for the man, he's more comfortable in that other part of his brain and describing, well, let's see, tell us. And he's telling a story about his relationship with her, which in time, if he disciplines himself and realizes what's going on, he really is building a bridge over to that word. Now, after 38 years, I can say to my wife and even initiate that, I love you, and I'm confident that I actually mean something by that because I've done that work for, you know, 38 some years.
Well, so it is. So who never knew that this was involved in the idea of love and romance and just saying I love you, more complicated than it seems. If you're having difficulty in your relationships, well, Daniel Pryor would love to help you. Daniel, life coach and counselor. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Well, you can call me at 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
More details as well at KCISRadio.com. We'll be back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast. The theme this week, love and romance, in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Do you love me?
You're a fool.
I know. But do you love me?
do I love you?
Well,
for 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked your cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now?
And there is the song that we were talking about in the first part of the show today. Do You Love Me? This Valentine's Day broadcast today. And if you're hearing this at another time, or if you want people to hear this discussion, remember that your show is podcast on your website. What is
correct.
That again?
Yeah, BibleBasedCounselor.com. There are podcasts of the shows that we have on the radio here. So,
Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor, and giving us some coaching, I think, this week on how to express our love and our romance. And let's move on to maybe what is the woman going through? We talked quite a bit about the difficulties the man is having.
I think the last part of the show, we gave all kinds of excuses for men.
Right.
I didn't mean to do that, but maybe it sounded that way. But yeah, I want to get into how we actually move forward and that sort of thing. We haven't talked about candies and flowers, and that can be important.
That can be important.
But I'll tell you what, it'll take some of the pressure off of that if through the rest of the year you practice these other things. And what do we mean by romance? I think that it's kind of a Hollywood versus heaven thing for a lot of us. I wrote a article years ago. It's actually at ChristianCounselorsForum.com. It's like about 14 or 16 years old, about romance or love. And is when we say romance, it's kind of a mix of eros and agape. That is, the romantic thing always has in it sort of that feel of a romantic embrace, of an intimate embrace. But that's not all there is to it. As a matter of fact, if we stop to think, that's not what most of romance is when we think of the word. It has more to do with acts that show that we cherish and acts that show that we care. It's actually agape. That's actually what romance has. If we want a strong romance in our relationship, the firmest foundation will be agape, and that's other-centered. It's putting that other person first and serving the other person. And when we do that, when we think of that, in fact, it's been argued by romantics and over the years that eros gets in the way of agape, or eros gets in the way of love, and love gets in the way of eros. So that sexual drive gets in the way of actually loving a person, vice versa. We've done some shows on that in the past about sex and marriage, and that's actually I agree with that. So what we want to do is we want to build lasting romance in some very specific ways. And we can actually do that. We don't have to. If you're a young married couple and you're wondering, you're going through that period of disenchantment and, you know, where is the romance gone? Well, the good news is you can do something about that. And it's the very practical things. And if you start doing it now, then you'll get through the troubled waters and you'll have romance in your marriage and romance that continues to build. So these are going to be some really practical things that we can do about this in this last part of the show. And, of course, one of them is communicating properly, and I've written some on communication, kind of a long paper on communication at, again, ChristianCounselorsForum.com, ChristianCounselorsForum.com, and over in the archives, if you look in the archives, there'll be a couple of articles on communication. But basically, communication has to do with body language, has to do with tone of voice, has to do with the words that I actually speak. There'd be like five tools. One would be timing. When is a good time to communicate? And for a lot of couples, it's a good idea to schedule a time. Now, that doesn't seem it seems like that's pretty scripted and not, you'd like it to be spontaneous and all that. But you know what? You have to plan your spontaneity. If you don't learn to plan your spontaneity early in your marriage, you'll regret it later on because there just won't be time for it. So you have to script in your spontaneity. I would advise couples to plan a time, a period in the evening where nothing's going on other than, like, if you've had your meal, a lot of times eating together. I just think that's an absolute must. I hear stories of couples where they cook different foods, and so he'll be in front of the TV and she'll be eating in front of the radio or something like that. Just not a good idea. There's got to be a time. Research has shown that when you're eating and your body is getting relaxed and comfortable, that's a good time to start discussion. But couples should, whether they've got kids or not, they've got to figure out a way to have a time when they're just together. And there's different ways to do that. That's a whole different show. You don't have to be talking with one another. You know, my wife and I sit down in the evenings and we have our books to read. And even though we're not talking to one another, we are with one another because of other things.
You read
together. Right, because of other things.
You're reading your own things, but you're in the same space.
There's an exchange, even though we're not talking to one another. An exchange is because of other things that we do and other ways that we communicate. So when I talk about a time together, I don't mean that you have to be, you know, eyeball to eyeball talking about what does our relationship mean. Certainly that can be part of it. But you need to be, you know, I've made the statement, you need to be making love in all the rooms of the house.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, agape, acts of service and things, and really showing that you care and actually beneath that, actually caring.
Well, I've heard the term, I think there was a book even called Sex Begins in the Kitchen.
Hmm.
And it has to do with that idea. Again, women need to be sort of being thought about, cherished mm-hmm. throughout the day mm-hmm. because women are slower to warm up to, you know, actual romance. That's, again, mm-hmm. maybe another mm-hmm. show. But the idea is this communicating throughout the day, I love you, I cherish you, I'm thinking about you, as opposed to mm-hmm. just dumping it all
yeah.
just before you go to bed.
And men can learn to do that. You know, the fallacy is that we think so differently that men just can't go there, but they can. It's a matter of wiring their right and left brain, and that can be done if we're intentional about it. So communication is a big part of that, timing, the words we actually use. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this today, but just realizing that a lot of people are careless with their words, and they never get around to actually learning to say exactly what they're trying to say. So we use rhetorical questions and symbolic words and things. We never really get around to good communication. The actual words we use, our tone of voice is absolutely critical. I mean, you can't communicate love with a tone of voice that says something different. Body language, facial expression, those five things are part of communicating. Also, another big part of communicating that's fundamental is to realize that communication is about communion. It's not just about getting my data to the other person and convincing the other person. It's communion, which leads us to another part of building lasting romance, and that is working towards shared being. Now, we've had shows before on personality, and I'd suggest that people go back to a couple of shows over in the if you go to the podcasts and you go down in older podcasts, probably the second page or something like that, you'll find personalities and personalities in marriage, and those would be good to listen to, because sharing being means empathizing, sharing boundaries, and sharing reality. Those are specific things. Empathizing really, in a nutshell, means it's about the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And when the other person's hurting, I actually hurt. When the other person's happy, I'm actually happy. That means I've got to be about the other person, not about me. Yeah, so building romance is the true labor of love. We talk about labor of love. It's both labor and it's a labor of love. You know, building romance is an intentional and orchestrated thing. So it's not going to come because we're in the same room at the same time, or because we're married. You know, a lot of times, you know, people get married thinking that it's autopilot. You know, because we love one another, we're going to make it. And that's really the wrong way to think about it. I mean, you have to build love. You don't have it when you first get married. Mm-hmm. You think you do, but you don't.
Yeah, we were both decrying that too. People just give up too easily in our mm-hmm. society. 5, 6, 7 years. You're going to have problems, mm-hmm. but if you hang in there...
And make it about the other person,
mm-hmm.
and I think that men are up to bat first here, because the woman is, for a lot of reasons, quite often in the vulnerable position. So it's to the man, initially. He's the one that's first got to lay down his life, and he's got to make it about his wife, and... very seldom things will go wrong if that's what's happening first. I probably got more gals listening to me at this time of day than men, so I don't know how you gals are going to tell your husbands, hey, I've got something for you to listen to. But it's actually for the man first. I mean, that's our responsibility first. We're the spiritual leaders, which means we're the first ones to apologize and you know, go the second mile. So I say it's intentional and it's orchestrated. And I think I would just leave people with this, that once again, to reiterate, you know, when a lot of times when we get married, we think we have love, but we, you know, need to realize that we don't have, that's not what we have. It needs to be built, but it can be built intentionally and orchestrated. That is, sit down and have conversations about where do we want to go and how will we get there? And this is where maybe some counseling comes in, or some books that you can read mm-hmm. that actually give you not just a direction to go, but step by step to get there, and kind of arrive at a place where, you know, there is romance in the relationship, mm-hmm. and then hopefully when Valentine's Day comes up, we'll remember.
We'll make
it.
Every day of the year Valentine's Day. There you go. And women will like that. Well, if people need help with their relationships and re-sparking some romance and talking about these issues. You specialize in that. Daniel, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
More details as well at KCISRadio.com. This has been the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.